Hello and welcome to episode 195 of the Live to Walk Again podcast. My name is Jeremy Dixon. With me this week, we have Ricardo Benavidez. Ricardo, how you doing, man?
Hey, Jeremy. How's it going, man? That's my name. Don't wear it out.
Okay. me and Brandon went solo last week, or I guess not that that kind of defies the definition of solo when I say me and Brandon, but we were without you last week. You were, I guess, on a little anniversary vacay with Aunt Gina. You guys have a good time at Leavenworth?
Yeah, it was really nice out there. It was kind of like today is around here, you know, about 70 degrees. It was beautiful on the other side of the mountains, quiet, no kids, not having to rush kids to haircuts or anything crazy like that, you know?
Yeah, that was one of Brandon's excuses for not being here today. I'm pretty sure he has another podcast he's doing today, too.
And
I'm sure will be very relevant to what we're doing. But anyway, had another incredible guest this week, Ricardo. I'm very excited. I've been following her for a while and wanting to get her on the show, and we were finally able to make it work. She's over in London, or in the United Kingdom somewhere. I'm not sure exactly where she's located. Maybe Wales. I think Wales, possibly.
Yeah. Yep.
And so, yeah, she, her name is Helen Fincham. She has a completely crazy, all of the stories of how people suffer spinal cord injuries are pretty tragic and just hard to even like wrap your head around. And hers kind of is on another level from that. Like, it's just like mind blowing, what exactly happened to her. And we'll let you guys hear it in the interview, but she essentially started feeling like shortness of breath, and then like arms started tingling, and like no kind of injury, no sickness, nothing like that that had transpired prior to this happening. Woke up with a stiff neck, she said, throughout the day, started having shortness of breath, arms started feeling maybe like they were falling asleep or something, and eventually ends up calling the paramedics, and they take her in, can't figure out what's going on, but now she can't walk, she can't move her legs, nothing. So just crazy. And she said they really still don't know the exact cause of what happened, but something caused her spinal cord to swell, causing these injury, causing her to essentially suffer a spinal cord injury. So
yeah, so you know, it's crazy when Gina and I go on these trips, we usually like pick a book out, right, to listen to in the car, because you can only sing Bye Bye Miss American Pie so many times, right, on road trips. So
you are the king of the dad jokes. I love it.
Yeah. So anyhow, one of the books that we were listening to, some books on tapes was, a book from Lessons from Lucy. And it, at the end of the book, it's basically lessons from your dog, right? You know, like, be happy like your dog. You know, your dog loves everybody. You know, your dog forgets all the torment that happens to him, you know, and just moves forward through life, right? And it's kind of one of those books. But at the end of it, there's an epilogue that he adds to it. And I'm not going to ruin this for anybody, but we'll talk about it after the interview. But it was just like, when I heard this interview from Helen, I was like, sometimes worlds collide, you know, sometimes things happen. And it was so eerie, I had to call you and get you out of your shower to tell you what it was about. And it was mind-blowing when I made the two connections, when I heard her story and I just got done listening to that book. So yeah, I think we should get to the interview.
Yep. We will do that right now. I ended up reading the article this morning, after I got up and going, and yeah, it was pretty, in I mean, it sounds very similar to what happened to Helen, for sure. Like what happened to this young lady, who was the daughter of the author of that book you listened to. So, anyway, yeah. All right, we will get to this interview, and we will talk to you guys on the other side. Enjoy, Helen Fincham. This week on the Live to Walk Again podcast, we are excited to visit with Helen Fincham, who is RMA Sport Great Britain Ambassador. She is an outreach coordinator for Wales for the Backup Trust, spinal cord injury survivor, and a disability advocate. Helen, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, this is great. This is great. So, you have definitely one of the more interesting stories that I've ever heard as far as, dealing with a spinal cord injury and paralysis. Can you tell us a little bit about kind of when you became paralyzed and how that all happened?
Sure. So, living a normal life, super sporty, active, outgoing, hardworking young person I was up until I was 21. The day before, I was in the fairground with my niece. Everything was normal. The next day, I woke up, had some food with my parents. I went back to bed because they were off to work, and it was my day off work, and I was living at home at this point. And I was just struggling to breathe, which I thought, okay, this can't be too much of a big deal. I have no idea what this is, because I wasn't an ill child either. Like I didn't have tonsillitis or an ear infection, like nothing like that ever came across me because I was super healthy and fit, nothing in the family history. So I'm sat there with a cup of tea, and all of a sudden I was like struggling and struggling, and it was like weird pains and tingling and things going on. And then what I was thinking about back to this morning when I woke up in the morning with like a neck ache, and I was thinking, gosh, today's been really weird. And I called my mum and dad, and back then I wasn't that close to my family as I am now. Called my mum, and she answered straight away because she was like, oh my gosh, hey, what's up? And I was like, I'm struggling to breathe. She rang the doctor. So I rang the doctors, and they were like, if you've got pains in your arms or anything, you need to go to hospital. Which just made me panic, and I was running up and down the stairs, hyperventilating because I was worried. I was panicking. I was on my own, thinking, "How am I going to get to hospital? What am I going to do? What is this? What's going on? This doesn't make sense." Nobody said what it is. Like, they didn't say like, "Oh, you're having a heart attack or a stroke or anything." So I was like, "What the hell?" And next thing you know, I'm just screaming, crying down the phone to my mum, like, "I can't breathe. I can't move." And this happened so quickly. Like 1 minute I was fine. But at this point, I had no idea. Paralysis didn't come through my thought process whatsoever. I had no idea what was going on. And paramedics came and first responders came. They calmed me down. I was sat in the bed. They did all the tests, and they were like, everything's fine. I was like, that's just not normal what just happened, though. Like, what was it? Anyway, long story short, we get to A&E, and everyone's just like, what have you done? What have you taken? Because this is so unusual. And they were like, you need to get up. And I was like, looking up at them on the floor, like, I can't, because I fell onto the floor. And I was like, I can't move, and I don't know why. So I'm like, get my mum in here, she'll advocate for me. She knows I don't tell porkies. She's like, she'll tell you straight. And next thing you know, I'm having tests done and all these tests, and then people start getting serious around me, and I'm thinking, what's going on, blah, blah. I stay the night in this one hospital, and then the next day I go to this other hospital, and they like do the reflexes on my leg, and I'm thinking, and my leg didn't move, and I'm like, that's so strange. But I went to this special hospital which only had like 6 beds for neuro patients, but I didn't know this at the time. But because there's only 6 beds, I didn't see anyone else like me because it was like a mixed ward. And I just thought I was poorly and I was going to get fixed and better. I had no idea that what world I was going to be entering into. But yeah, so I couldn't move, I was completely paralyzed, and I had no idea.
So, do they know what caused this to happen? I mean, is there any kind of explanation that they were able to give you eventually?
No, not eventually, still not to this day. It's still more of a elimination diagnosis. So, they did like steroids, they did all the tests and anything they could figure out to do to get rid of some of the inflammation, because they were the only what they narrowed it down to is that my body must have thought it was a virus, attacked itself, and just completely shut down. So like killed all the nerves off and all that. And that's how I ended up being paralyzed. But they can't say why it happened because I wasn't poorly leading up to it. No virus, no illness, no accident, nothing. There was no answer to give them to help them figure out why what happened to me.
Wow. So what level do they like say that, you know, like I mean are you like actually like diagnosed as like a level, you know, C spinal cord injury then?
I think the test they did was more like the inflammation is all down the spine, so there's no clear indication of like a break, like a typical spinal cord injury incident that may occur. But the sensory is C5-6, so like I can't feel some of my hands, and like obviously my arms and my hands are affected. But at the start, I was completely paralyzed, couldn't move a thing, and now I've regained some movement, but it's kind of a standstill. So I've got like movement in my arms and limited in my hands, but I'm good with that.
Yeah, wow. Wow. So do they send you to like a rehab hospital after the paralysis kind of sets in and have you start learning how to live with this injury?
Yeah, so I spent 2 months with all these tests going on just to try and figure out, and that's where I got my elimination diagnosis. I didn't get told for a while. I don't even think I knew I was paralyzed at the beginning, which was bizarre, even though I was watching them move my legs and I couldn't, there was no connection. Like it felt so disconnected and it was so weird. But I still, paralysis, I don't know, maybe I was naive, who knows? It was crazy. But 2 months tests, and then I spent a year in a rehab facility then, which was just local to where I live, so it wasn't too far for me to travel, thankfully. But yeah, that's where the hard work started.
Yeah, wow. And so, you know, going from an active 21-year-old to having this paralysis, like what, I mean, what's going through your head at that point, like as they're narrowing these things down and but in the meantime you can't move, you can't walk, you can't, you know, you're having trouble breathing and stuff like that. And did your breathing kind of like level off and make it so you were able to breathe? I mean, obviously now you're able to breathe fine, but was it more of like just a kind of a panic thing that was setting in, do you think, when you couldn't breathe initially?
Yeah, I think it was more just like my body fighting to try and protect like the other organs trying to survive, whereas I was panicking and stressing all everywhere else. I think my body was just trying to prioritize the more important organs. So I think that's why my breathing was a little bit affected. But yeah, it was at the start, for sure. I can imagine everyone has probably said probably a similar kind of thing, like at the start when if when I was told that it was like could be a spinal stroke or something along those lines, I obviously broke down and I thought my life was over. But when I was getting wheeled in on a trolley lying flat and I just looked into this rehab hospital and there was just wheelchairs everywhere, I was like, stopped. My whole life just felt like it stopped and I just cried my eyes out. I thought, oh my God, my life's over. I'm never gonna like live a quality. I just didn't see what could have become. And I just, yeah, it was a really tough time to start off with. I was in a really dark place. I didn't want to speak to anyone, didn't want to know. And then without it being pushed in my face, there was people coming around who were in wheelchairs but lived experience, and they were talking about, oh, you know, I go on holiday, I go out, and whereas people were coming to my face and saying like, oh, you'll be okay, I just wasn't listening. It just went over my head because these are able-bodied people telling me I'll be okay. I just didn't believe anything they said. But then there was like this young lad coming around from a charity, and he was like, yeah, I go on nights out, I go on holidays, so I drive. And I thought, oh, that's I'm 21. That's like what I want to be able to do and crack on and get back to. So, you know, I was just earwigging to all his conversations he was having with other people, and then eventually I was like, how would you do that then? And then that's it. From that moment on, they couldn't keep me indoors. I was coming in late night, 2 a.m. Like.
I love it. So transitioning out of the hospital and back home and kind of into the new reality that you're dealing with, you know, are you able to go back and live with your parents at first? Or like how, I mean, do they have to make renovations to the house to for you to be able to get in and out? How did that whole process work for you?
Yeah, well, I lived abroad before, in like before my accident was in 2016, and I lived abroad in 2015 on my own. So I had a bit of experience of, paying my own way and living on my own terms and having to buy my own food. So I was like, right, okay. But then I came home, just did a few holidays with the girls and loads of trips away and just enjoyed myself. And then this happened. So when this happened, my parents' home, they said, well, we can't afford to like renovate it or make it adapted because it's just not gonna, it's gonna be too much. It's not worth it. You're better off getting a place of your own. And I was like, yes. Because I was like, do you know what? Actually, I might really prefer that living on my own. Obviously, didn't know I was going to, tough it was going to be at the start, but it's nice to have your own space to go through what you need to grow and with this new lifestyle. So, yeah, I was really lucky to get a very accessible ground floor place.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So, what were those early days like, and like, how did friends and family kind of help with, helping you get through those early kind of trials that you had to go through, after this injury?
I think because my family and I weren't close before, it was really hard to accept the help from them. And if anything, I didn't want them to be the ones doing it. I kind of wanted to disconnect that. I wanted them to be my family and my friends to be my friends. But over time, I think I kind of just grew and changed my mindset of, like I've got the right people in as in carers to help me. And then my family could be my family, but they can help a little bit here and then. And I think that's really important to, like, it was important to me anyway, was to make, don't get me wrong, like, it would have been nice, it could have been looked after my family, but we're not built like that. Being on top of each other is just not a good mix. So it works well as it is now. So yeah, but having a good support system around you is really important because they keep going and championing your journey in the early days when you're on really tough times and you're in your grumpy state and you're moody and you're upset and you're emotional because you're feeling all these new emotions of what you're living with this new lifestyle. But seeing, got look, reflecting back and looking back at them, they're like, come on, we'll get you out and we'll find you this and we'll get. It's like, actually, I'm super grateful that they did do that because although I didn't see it at the time, it did certainly help.
Oh, that's good. That's good. As far as like outpatient rehabilitation after you're out of the hospital, like do they, is that something that you went through as well? And how long did you get to kind of keep going to doing rehab, or was it more like you just would do stuff at home after that?
Yeah, so I spent the year there because it was just because it was having a high level injury and needing so much more help, and I was gonna have my own place. They had to sort out a lot of, adaptations, equipment, and paid people and carers who were going to be coming in. So that's why I was there a lot longer than probably expected. But once you've done rehab, it's kind of unless you've got money to continue physio afterwards. It's just not an option, or a compensation, for example. It's just not an option here, unfortunately. And that's really expensive. And I don't quite have that money, but I did manage to do a little bit of physio afterwards. So it was great to continue it. But my focus now is on other things. Like obviously at the start, you are focused on like walking again or your recovery and whatnot. But I think even though I'm not physically doing physio or anything right now, but being active in my own home and going out and making my home as independent and accessible as possible, like enables my quality of lifestyle. I've grown with it and I learn more every day by, right, if I change that, I'm able to do that then. And that, that's my recovery that's important to me now is just being independent.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I like that. How difficult, I guess, Helen, was it for you to, after your injury, to start sharing kind of your story online? Did you have any like apprehension about like posting yourself in a wheelchair and doing these different like, going through the kind of the journey after this injury?
Yeah, I remember in re when I was in the rehab hospital, and I was like, oh my gosh, going out, I didn't want anyone to see me that I knew. I knew my friends were familiar with it, but I didn't want to see extra people who know me but don't know me because I just didn't want to, I wasn't ready to be like telling my story because it's a lot. And obviously, with my story, it's not clear cut. So then they have question marks and they're asking me questions. I'm like, and I don't know. And it's really frustrating. But Funnily, like by the rehab hostel by us, we've got like there was like this pub that everyone, it's been there for years and the hospital had been there for years. So they were used to people coming down in wheelchairs. It was, you know, and I had this big, oh my God, I don't want anyone to see me in a wheelchair, big, and I made a big deal. And we got there and nobody was looking at me. And I was like, oh, okay. I just built that up all in my head and there was just nobody cares. You're just another person. So that just made me think, right, okay, I'm gonna start going out more now. So I started going out with more of my friends. I didn't really post much of my, I know like I commend those who journey their rehab recovery as they're in a spine hospital. I didn't quite do that. I don't know why, but I couldn't really use my hands and my arms and I don't know, I could have maybe asked someone, but I just didn't. And then yeah, I posted my first picture was, oh my, like the emotion, the stomach dropping was a big deal. And looking back now, I've changed so much. And yeah, it's just, yeah, it was crazy, crazy, crazy times. And a lot of comments, a lot of messages. I was overwhelmed. I was like, ooh.
Yeah, so you must have had a good like positive experience though. Like I'm sure the people were reaching out and making positive comments towards you and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a lot of positive comments and a lot of questions like, oh my God. And a lot of people wanted to support and help and like fundraise in any way just to get in. Any sort of additional support that I needed. So yeah, it's really nice to reach out. I know a lot of people don't want to ask for help and nobody wants to set up their own fundraising page, but maybe if someone else just nudges and does it for you and then you are grateful they do it. But I know we don't want to ask, but reaching out for help is really important because you know we can't do this alone. The support, we need the support and it's just not out there. So yeah, really grateful for those who helped me out.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I love that. So transitioning from that point, then I guess you're 22, maybe 23, getting out of the rehabilitation hospital and living on your own and kind of like maneuvering this new world. Like, how do you get from there to, I guess, where you're at now, where you're an ambassador for RMA Sport Great Britain and then also an outreach coordinator for Wales at Backup Trust. How, where did you go to school, or had you already gone to school prior to your injury?
Yeah, went to school, did college, did sports. I was a really sporty person. That's what I wanted to go down the route of. But I ended up just working. I was such a hard worker and I attained quite high like responsibility and roles in jobs as well. Like at a young age, I was manager and that was what I enjoyed, traveling and driving and being away. And I was a really confident person in my own self and just traveling on my own. Like I'm happy to do that. That's why I went to Spain and lived on my own. And when this happened to me, I was always eager to just get back doing something because I idolized others who were, you know, back at like doing things again out there. And I was like, you know, if they can, I can. It's a great presence to see on social media. A lot of other people sharing their stories. So you can decide when you're ready to do it. You can, you know, you've got that control of not somebody telling you, but you can see what they're doing and going, oh, I might do that one day. That sounds cool. That looks cool. And it opens up new doors because there's a lot of things I probably wouldn't have never done before if I was able-bodied. Whereas now, you know, I'm like, oh, I want to go to like do some flying. And it's like, I would have never done that before. I never would have had time. But now I'm actually living like a more quality of life. Even though I've got a disability and people would think that would hinder my life, I've actually got like, you know, I've got more love around me, more people, I'm doing more. And the job I've got now, so that's the outreach engagement coordinator for Wales at Backup Trust, is basically the person that came onto the ward when I was in hospital. So obviously he helped me get out without pushing it in my face. He was going around chatting to patients, offering lived experience, peer support, and sort of gen of people attaining unfortunately spinal cord injuries, but hopefully I can give them a bit of, you know, insight to, you know, you can do this, you can do that, what like I had, which helped me. The other position that I acquired being ambassador for RMA Sport Great Britain is they deliver lots of sports wheelchairs to all of Great Britain who play wheelchair rugby and things like that, and other activities like dance and WCMX and things like that. I'm not that cool to be acquiring those, but they just live local down the road and we thought we'd team up as a partnership, both that we're in Wales and I love following the rugby. I don't play it, but I like to support and share. And I suppose it We're hoping that I can help them with a bit of social media presence because I'd like to share other people's wins. You know, I like to share people's stories, I like to share people what they get up to because it might resonate with someone else. But if anything, I just love to share people's wins.
That's great. Yeah, I saw on your social media, I guess on Instagram, that you had been out at one of the wheelchair rugby tournaments, I think, recently, and it looked like you were, yeah, it looked like a great time. So that's very cool that
Yeah, great.
yeah, and you know, what kind of, I guess, how rewarding is that, both like on both avenues, the back with Backup Trust being an outreach coordinator, and then also doing the helping people get these sport wheelchairs. Like, I mean, that must be pretty amazing when you're able to donate a wheelchair to somebody to be able to like get out and do, you know, participate in wheelchair rugby or basketball or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I think I know it's like everyone says, oh, such a rewarding job role, but for me, like I've got the information, so why not share it? Do you know what I mean? Like information, knowledge is power, as they say. And when I was in rehab and having that person give all the information to me, it made a difference in my lifestyle, made a difference into where I am now, like of how far I've come and my mindset and physical, everything. So I've got some experience. I might not be the right for everyone, but I can always say, like, try this, try that. This is available just to enable a better quality of lifestyle and build their confidence. And, you know, if they want to take part in some sport, like, I know a place to go, it's down the road, and they'll donate chairs. Like, and I just think that's what makes a difference is, and I enjoy that's the aspect of what I enjoy is just making that difference of someone's life a little bit better in the situation they've ended up in.
No, that's really awesome. So as far as backup trust goes, so they do a lot of it sounds like connecting with people that are newly injured when they're still in the hospital, and then but I was kind of looking through their link tree that was attached to your Instagram profile, and it seems like they do like a wide array of things for people that are dealing with spinal cord injuries after their injury. So, you know, can you tell us kind of like a broad overview of like all that Backup Trust does?
Sure. So although like I'm the first person that will see newly paralyzed patients in a hospital center, our goal is also to outreach and find those patients that don't make it to a spinal center or rehab facility because not everyone gets to make it. So we reach out to other general hospitals and offer support and we'll go and visit them one to one. And then we continuously reach out to ex-patients too. So like one day I spent in the hospital, and then one day I'm doing admin. So the day I'm doing admin, I'm calling up ex-patients that have left hospital or people who have reached out on the website referral. And I'm just like, hey, how's things going? Can I help you with anything? Would our services be of help of you to you now? Because you're home and you're situated, and when you're in hospital, you've got a million things going on in your head that are more, you might want to prioritize to sort out to get home. But then when you get home, you're like, wow, this is real. And that's when it like proper hits you. So, you know, I check in with them and I say, like, you know, we've got mentoring. So we've got loads of services to be fair, but the main one we do is like mentoring. So we'll match like someone like me up with another young person, that young female's got a similar injury level. And we can have telephone calls of, and just like say anything you want, really ask them anything you want as a mentor. And then we also do family mentoring. So we match up, say, my family with another family who've got a loved one, similar injury and things like that. So the family can also, you know, they're going through it too. They have question marks and a lot of emotions. And that's a place for them to feel safe to speak to another family and be like, life's hard. How do you do it? So that's another safe space for them to have those telephone calls. And then we do like skills and activities. So we like come to the center, do wheelchair skills because you don't actually realize how like inside the hospital, stunning. You know, you're wrapped in a bubble, everything's flat, everything's wide, everything's open. But you get outside, it's like pavements galore. So, you know, just attacking those skills to make them confident in the wheelchair. We do powered wheelchair skills too. And lots of activities like canoeing, rock climbing, skiing, yeah, loads. And then we just, if we can't make it in person, we do have like a Zoom lounge, so keeping people connected, so maybe they don't feel confident enough to get out of the house, but you know, they can join in as they please and talk about loads of different topics. But yeah, obviously being a charity, you continuously need fundraising for all these fun things, but we try and make, you know, we're trying to build confidence and just give everyone a better quality of lifestyle and giving them all the skills that they need. And even things like getting back to work and school, you know, we try and cover all those important aspects of life when you're sustaining.
Yeah, that's so important. I mean, that it sounds like, the backup trust is really doing some great work for the community over there. That's amazing. I was wondering, so I know you said you haven't tried like wheelchair rugby, but have you tried any other adaptive sports since you've been paralyzed?
Well, when we were in the rehab hospital, there is an opportunity every once every year. There's a thing called Spinal Games by an organization called Wheelpower, and it's in one of the main bigger rehab hospitals because they've got the facilities for it. And there you get to try a load of different sports, which I found really fun actually, because you could try like archery, wheelchair racing, rugby, golf, standing in a chair, getting in a standing chair, trying golf, table tennis, like anything you could think of, you were able to try it. But I was extremely weak when I tried it, and I'm really competitive, so I was like, I want to be the best. But then I spent a year in hospital, and then the year after, I was just like integrated into my little whole new life of living on my own and being high level and relying on carers. And then it was COVID, then yeah, you know, I just like got back into the swing of things of life and you know, getting back to work and things like that. But you know, there's still time to try, so maybe, who knows, maybe I'll give wheelchair rugby a go and maybe table tennis.
Yeah, I love it. Well, Helen Fincham, I appreciate you so much for making this work so we could get on this from across the Atlantic Ocean and make this all through the power of Zoom. I mean, Zoom is like you mentioned before with like the Zoom lounges that you guys put on through
Yeah.
Backup Trust. Like it's so like this has kind of like made it so we can all connect so much easier. So
Definitely.
yeah, thank you so much for coming on. Will you give everybody your social media links so they can find you online? And I'll include them all in the notes as well. But yeah, give us your social media spots so we can go check you out.
If anything, this worked really well for me because we have the time difference and I'm such a night owl. So when you propose the times and I was like, hey, my time was like 12 yours. I was like, yeah, absolutely. You won't catch me get up in the morning.
Perfect.
But no, this has been great. Thank you so much for having me. My socials are my full name pretty much. It's Helen Fincher. I mainly use Instagram. I do have TikTok, but I don't really know my I think it's like Finchy57 possibly on TikTok, but
Okay.
maybe I'll post a little bit more there. But yeah, that's my main active ones is instant. TikTok is just me doing a bit of fun trends. Nothing too serious on there. I'm not a influencer just yet. I just like to have a little bit of fun online and share a little bit of my story.
All right. Well, I love it. Yeah, we'll include all the social media links in the notes so everybody can connect with you. And thank you again so much for being willing to come on the podcast and share your story.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome.
All right, thanks, Helen. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, that was Helen Fincham. I want to thank her again for joining me on the show and being willing, to be so open and tell her story. It was really incredible. She, man, like what a, just she's such a, she's overcome so much. I mean, that would be, I'm just thinking like how hard that would be to deal with at 21 years old, happy, healthy, young woman, and then all of a sudden, boom, next day you're unable to do anything. And yeah, man, that was just insane story. And her, like getting herself back out there. She talked about the pub that was like right next to the rehab hospital that she would go to, and that really kind of, and that a lot of the people from the hospital would go there, and people who had been in the hospital there would go there. So it was like very uncommon, and she had like worked it up in her head that it was going to be this, big thing that she had to, I don't know if she said look perfect, but she was like very nervous about going out around people, and nobody even, it was like not a big deal whatsoever. And she, so it's good that she had that experience so early on in her injury. But yeah, I mean, just what an incredible story. And the things she's doing now with working, essentially being like a mentor, or like somebody that can connect with people after they've had an injury, and kind of help them maneuver some of the obstacles that come up with this injury early on, especially, is just incredible. So.
I agree, Jeremy. When she talked about her self-consciousness about going out in public, I remember early on, you've always been Jeremy to us, whether you were in a chair or running around, before pre-accident. So I just never, we never really talked about it, but you and I have had some deep discussions about that since. And I think it's just very common, but people don't really talk about it. And nobody really had you didn't have a platform like people do now.
Right.
And and it's more common to see more people. I think it's more accepting. People are more accepting over the last 20, 25 years, where you see your neighborhoods are changing, where they're cutting in curbs for people with wheelchairs or disabilities. You see handicap apartments on bottom floors. You see all kinds of accommodations for people with disabilities that you didn't see back 25, 30 years ago. And
Yeah.
I think that makes it a lot less scary for people that end up in situations, whether through aging or having to start to use a walker as you get older, or through an accident or a disability that suddenly comes on, like in your case, or like in Helen's and many others.
Yeah,
So,
no doubt. That's yeah, they've come a long way for sure
yeah.
with all of that. I wanted to say, so the first time I had an outing, I think you and Aunt Gina were there, at least you guys, we all had dinner together somewhere there, near the hospital in Puyallup. But I remember they were like, if you don't pick a place to go, we're going to pick a place for you. Whoever it was, like the recreational therapist at the hospital. And I was like, all right. And so I went out for like the longest, outing that anybody had gone on there, because I was like, all right, I'm gonna go see a movie. I made the two whatever therapists go with me, and like Brandon and Matt, to go watch the 1998 movie Wild Things, with I forget who was it. It was Charlie Sheen's wife. I can't remember her name now, but
Oh,
it was
yeah.
her and Neve Campbell, and they like had a make out session in the movie. So I just like wanted to make it as uncomfortable as I could for everybody. So and then we went out for dinner afterwards. I think we might have met you guys for dinner or something like that. But yeah, it was pretty crazy. So I went out for like 8 hours, and my the funny thing about that, my catheter clogged up, but I didn't realize it because my bladder was still so big at that point, it didn't matter. So you didn't start getting autonomic dysreflexia right away. And I got back to the hospital, and they're like, there's nothing in your urine bag. And I'm just like, I don't know. I've like had, they're like, have you not drank any water or anything? I'm like, no, I've had a bunch of water. And they're like, oh God, hold on, get you back into bed. I have to change this thing out. It was a pretty insane little trip for me that day. But anyway, but I do remember the same thing, being like very nervous about being out in public and being in a wheelchair, and just, and I
Feeling
still
like
have those
everybody's
same,
looking at you.
yeah,
Yeah, like everybody's looking at you.
I still have those
But
same.
But when we go out now, you know, whether we go to a bar or something, everybody's always very accommodating, you
Yeah,
know,
and I feel
and
like they
accepting.
always, yeah, I mean, and I really feel like they always, nobody was ever like rude to me or anything when I would go out before either. So it wasn't ever, it was never an issue. It was it just, you cook it up in your head, you know, like you're, it
Yeah.
just, it's so easy to do. So, you know,
Yeah, exactly.
yeah.
Yeah, it's like having a pimple on prom night. Right? You see it as the moon and nobody even notices
Right.
it. Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, so yeah, I want to thank Helen again. That was incredible. She's an amazing young woman, and yeah, I just want to thank
Well,
her.
yeah, can we touch on the book though from Mr. Barry about his daughter Sophie
Yeah,
that had a
for
very
sure.
si similar thing happen to her?
Yeah, and I looked this
So,
up, and it, what was it? It was called transverse myelitis.
yeah,
It's an
exactly.
autoimmune disorder that affected his daughter.
Yeah,
And in the article you sent me, it didn't really say if his daughter, it did say she was had gone, like she was 18 and was like getting ready to go off to college at Duke University. And that it said later in the article that she was in her freshman year and was hoping to be caught up by or catch up through summer quarter or whatever. So she's back to school and doing well, it sounds like, but I'm not sure if
Yeah,
it.
she had to go through about 6, 7, 8 weeks of rehab where she was able to walk with a walker, and she had to learn how to walk again. But she was able to walk, and she's probably, you know, healthier now than she was back then. I think this happened in 2019 or 2018 with her,
Oh, okay.
and so she was able to do that and move her legs, and you know, so it was very similar to what happened to Helen, because it happened like overnight with her, you know, according to the story in the book. So, you know, it's Lessons from Lucy. And if you don't, you know, you can get that book online and listen to it. It's a great book, by the way. But if you just want to listen to the story of his daughter, it's the epilogue at the end and talks about, you know, see, they're not. So. Yeah.
All right. Well,
So.
I think you might have glitched out there for a second, but says my internet connection is unstable.
Oh.
I gotta get it fixed so we can record in the studio again, Ricardo. I don't know what is going on, man. But
Oh, are you
we'll
still pirating your internet from your neighbors?
No.
No.
I wish, man. Shoot, if I could, I would. But no. I don't know why, man. It's just modem's on the other side of the house. I probably should move it in here. Anyway, yeah, if you could like, rate, listen, review, share the podcast, we would appreciate it. I did see Ricardo for some reason. I don't know how I had not noticed it up to this point, but you can leave comments on Spotify on the podcast. So if you guys could, we need to up these comments. There's been a couple over the last few episodes, but yeah, please you know, let us know how we're doing, ask any questions, whatever you got. We're there. I know you can do it on Spotify. I know you can do it on Apple Podcasts, possibly
Yeah, and
some
especially
of
if
the
you
others.
guys have any new leads or anything like that, that would be great to see that in the comments, right?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So yeah, anyway, yeah, let us know if you guys have any comments or concerns or questions. We are here to answer those. And yeah, like I said, if you could like, rate, listen, review, share the podcast, we would appreciate it. And we will be back next week with another incredible guest. And thanks, Ricardo. Maybe Brandon will be
You're
back next
welcome.
week, depending on
I hope so.
what his podcast interview schedule looks like.
Okay.
All right. We'll
All
talk
right.
about it next time.
All right. Thanks, Jeremy.